Yesterday, our country celebrated Valentine's Day. Long separated from its original intention, the celebration of a heroic martyr who preferred death than to renounce his faith and was decapitated. It had nothing to do with chocolates or flowers, but real love, a love that is sacrificial for the sake of Christ, our God and King. But we celebrated Valentine's Day, and the question is, have you ever been in love? Have you ever felt what that feels like? Or even just to have a crush? You know, when you're in love, among the many things that happens, you want to learn everything about the person that you love or that you have a crush on. What's their favorite color? What's their favorite food? What's their favorite places to go? What annoys them? What excites them? What do they like to do? What do they not like to do? What are their favorite things? What are their least favorite things? And you want to learn all these things because you want to do what pleases them. You want to make all the changes in your life to draw them in because you're in love with them. And learning about them isn't an imposition of rules, requirements, and restrictions, but learning about them is an opportunity to draw closer in intimacy with that person, to be known and to know. That's key at the heart of falling in love. And when we're in love, knowing what that person wants and doesn't want, like and doesn't like, isn't an obligation, a restriction, an oppression to your freedom, but an opportunity to grow in deeper intimacy with this beloved person or the person with whom you have a crush. The same is true with our God. He has loved us first, unconditionally. Paul tells us in his letters that while we were still sinners, Christ suffered and died for us. He didn't wait for us to get better first. And he loved us to the extreme, unto death. He is madly in love with us because of who he is, not because of who we are. And so it is the invitation of our God to respond, I loved you, I love you. And our response is to keep his commandments. So if we're in love with God, we want to know everything about him. His rules, his laws, his commandments are not an imposition, not an obligation, not a restriction of our freedom, but an opportunity to grow in intimacy with him, to respond to a God who has first loved us. Because if we love God, it will be revealed by keeping his commandments. And that's something that's very much lost on our culture today, even among Catholics. People say, I believe in Jesus, but they don't keep his commandments. Well, how do you believe in Jesus as God and God tells you to do something and you don't do it? Then he's not God, or you don't believe in him, right? Because faith is action. James talks about this. Show me your faith and I will show you my faith through my works. I will show you that I believe because of what I do and how I live. In the first letter of John chapter 2, he says, the way we can be sure that we know him, referring to Jesus, is that we keep his commandments. The one who says he knows him but does not keep his commandments is a liar, and the truth is not in him. The way we can be sure that we know him is if we live just as he lived. To know, to love, means our lives are changed. We're changed for the other. We're different. We behave differently. We act differently. We do things to please the other. And in this case, it's God himself. And when we keep his commands, we're not just simply appealing to another person. We're actually helping ourselves because God's commandments don't benefit him in any way. They benefit us. God's commandments are known through the natural law, through reason themselves. Don't kill, don't steal, don't commit adultery, don't lie, right? Don't covet the neighbor's goods or wife. It's well, we would say in regular language, common sense, so to speak. And when we do these things, God doesn't become more divine, more holy, more powerful, more glorious. We become more holy, more glorious, more like him. We become free from sin so that we can be free to actually do the good that we were made to be and to do. Today's gospel, along with many examples, is followed or is preceded by the Beatitudes. Right, blessed are you. Right, in Matthew's gospel, there are 8 or 9 Beatitudes, and Luke just 4. And the Beatitudes are Christ's new teachings. But as he says in today's gospel, following those Beatitudes, blessed are you, right, is not that these somehow do away with the Ten Commandments. The Beatitudes show us how, as a Christian, we're called to live when we're free from sin. And how life can be when we're free from sin because we keep the commandments. The Beatitudes are not a way of abrogating the Ten Commandments. These no longer apply. Do what you want as long as you're blessed. And so he emphasizes that in today's gospel. Right? The Beatitudes are what happens when we can live beyond the thou shalt not. When we can learn and realize that our Catholic faith is not about all the things we're not allowed to do, of rules and restrictions and laws that confine and oppress us when we want to do whatever we feel like doing. That form of Catholicism is miserable. It's not Catholicism. But many of us try our very hardest to live that out year after year, decade after decade. And those are the miserable, long-faced, angry, sad, judgmental, faithful, religious people that we run into church. There's no joy because they're not living in a relationship of love. They're not in love. They're just following rules, and rules don't save anyone. Are you in love with Jesus Christ? Do you know how much he loves you? Because at the core of all of this is the heart. And that's the point of Christ's teachings today. If you have heard it said, whoever kills shall be liable to judgment. I say whoever is angry with his brother or condemns him or calls him a fool has committed murder in their heart. What is Christ getting at? It's not the action. It's where the action proceeds from, which is the heart. None of us sin out of nowhere. We weren't just praying the rosary and then all of a sudden we robbed a bank. Right? We thought about it. The idea came to our mind. We entertained it, played it out for a while in our heads. Then we started desiring it with our heart, and then we acted on it. There's a whole process that precedes the actual sin. That's why in the act of contrition, we pray to avoid the near occasion of sin, so that avoiding engaging in these temptations in our mind and then desiring in them our hearts, we will not commit them by our actions, because it was never in our mind or our heart to begin with. We didn't desire it. And if we do, all the more reason to know the commandments and pray for God to liberate us of these disordered, not ordered toward goodness, toward life, disordered desires. Because Christ wants us to be free, free from sin, so that we're free to love and to be loved, to fall in love. The saints were people that were in love. And they just fell in love every day over and over again. It's like those Hallmark movies, right? The stuff of Hollywood that we rarely see in real life, that as a couple gets older together, they fall in love even more. And on their 25th and their 40th and their 50th wedding anniversary, they've been through so much and experienced so much, and yet they couldn't love each other more. They say less because they know so much about the other. And nothing's more delightful than just to be together. They don't have to do anything or spend money. It's just a delight to be in the presence of the other, the beloved. That's what we do when we come to Mass, to be in the presence of our beloved, who is literally here, body, blood, soul, and divinity in the Eucharist. He will never leave us orphaned. He will never abandon us. One of the followers of St. Thomas Aquinas asked him, Father, why do we have the Eucharist? Thomas thought about it and he said, well, the nature of friendship is to be present to the other. And no one is a greater friend to us than Jesus. And that's why we have the Eucharist. Because in the Eucharist, our friend is always with us and we are never alone. As we prepare to enter into the Lenten season, to engage once again in going back to the basics of prayer, fasting, and almsgiving, we break our attachments to money, to food and pleasure, right, and to our will, so as to be free to give money to those who need it more, to discipline our bodies so that our will governs our actions and not our passions, and to separate ourselves from the one thing we want to cling to the most, money and greed, by giving it to those who need it the most, recognizing that everything we have is a gift from God. It's a Lenten season, my favorite season of the year, because it's all about going back to the basics, freeing ourselves from worldly attachments so as to fall in love again. To fall in love again. Have you ever been in love? Have you ever fallen in love with Jesus? If you're not there yet, he hasn't given up on you. But if we come with open hearts, expressing our desires to him in prayer, opening ourselves, being vulnerable, expressing to him what we desire, what we yearn for, what we need, our heartbreaks, our sadness, our joys, our sorrows, like an intimate close friend, knowing we are not judged, but only loved. It's all about the heart. And it's from the heart that Christ loves us. And it's from our hearts that he desires for us to love him in return. We show that not by what we say, but by what we do in keeping his commands. We are the Sacred Heart Catholic Church, the parish of his heart. May we have hearts like his own, which loves us unto death, and to whom we must love, faithful to his commands, and free, free from sin, free to do the good we are made to do, to be happy and in love all over again.